podcast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Airfoot Elijah, and I am so excited. I just can't hide it because I'm here with Adam Christensen from MattCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
And
Apple might get you beat on the conversation this week, though.
What's
that? They may have had the best conversation. Apple may have given the best conversation.
Yeah, but it wasn't half hour. Of course, let's be honest, ours probably won't
true,
be
that's right. You have that caveat in you.
That's true. I also have Leander Kinney joining us as well. Hey, Leander.
Hey, have fun.
Hi, obviously, a very exciting day. Apple had their... We're just fresh off their event, and they talked for about 60 minutes about iPhones. And not really much more than that, besides a little bit about iOS 7. So we're going to talk all about that and cover everything that Apple announced and what we think about what they announced. So much great stuff to talk about. I just want to mention this episode is supported by Shutterstock.com, who has over a million high-quality video clips. If you're a filmmaker, videographer, maybe you're building a website, Shutterstock has the assets you need to make your creative projects even better. Tons of great stock videography. Head on over to Shutterstock.com. You can browse everything for free. If you decide to make a purchase, you can save 25% off. Just use the code CULTCAST9 when you sign up for your new account. Adam, thanks again for joining us. Last minute. Well, it's not really last minute. I warned you last week.
No, you planned it.
But it's so hectic after these events, kind of gathering information as we were talking about.
Yeah.
And as the event just ended, we're going to put out as much information as we know. But of course, a lot of this stuff is going to be, as Adam would say, parsed out.
Yeah, subject to change.
Asterisk. I think we may have just found our episode title right there. This is, of course, a special episode of the Cult Cast coming out early to cover the news event. We're not going to have another one later this week. This is going to be it. So we wanted to get it out early so that we could get you the information as soon as possible. Guys, let's start with your initial impressions of today's event. I am obviously very excited, as you can see from my extra long hello at the very beginning of the episode. Adam, what were your impressions of today's event?
I appreciate that it didn't drag on forever and ever. Right?
Yeah, it was a short one. I mean, they've been gone like, what, two and a half hours?
Yeah.
And this one was quick.
It was quick. It was over relatively fast.
Yeah, just they got in, they gave you the relevant information that you needed to. I was a little worried when they started doing the iOS 7 stuff because a lot of it was a rehash of WWDC, mm-hmm. but they jumped through that really quickly. Somebody pointed out, I obviously wasn't there. Do you guys have people there on the ground there?
No, not that I'm aware of. Leander,
no, they don't invite any Apple, you know, specific publications.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
With a few exceptions, but it's mostly the mainstream media they're
after.
That's
a great point. I never considered that.
Yeah, there's almost none. None of the specialist Apple publications there.
I wonder why they don't do that. You would think
they don't need to because they've already got that audience.
Huh.
Yeah. Good point. And I heard it seemed like it was jam packed. I mean, the people who were there were like, it was just like, you know, worse than, I don't know, Coach on a teeny tiny airline or something like that. But what I heard about the iOS part was that they just sort of had slides. They just sort of ran through the bullet point list really quick. I think Craig Federighi was up there for like all of 2 minutes, which was great because that allowed them a lot of time to get to the iPhone stuff, which is, like you said at the top, was really what it was all about.
Yeah, I liked that it was kind of brief too, and I did like that they didn't just pack in a bunch of stuff, which implies that we're going to see another event in October, as we talked about last show, that's going to cover the remaining things that they have to update before Christmas, because obviously they have to update all this stuff before the holiday season. So this was really, really quickly, as Adam said, about iOS 7, and then they announced the iPhone 5S, and then they announced the iPhone 5C, and then the iPhone 5S. Let's cover what they did mention about iOS 7. It's going to be available September 20th for all to download. I'm really excited about that because, you know, our teams get to use the beta copies.
The 18th, though, right?
Yeah, it's the 18th.
Oh, it's the 18th?
Not the 20th.
Okay.
Yeah, the 18th.
Subject to change. the title's becoming more appropriate as we carry on. So the 18th, excuse me. And I think this is really cool because a lot of our listeners have never used this iOS before. And we get to use it, but they don't really get to understand what we're talking about until they get it in their hands. So that's really cool. It's going to be cool to have all of our listeners actually go use it. That way they know like the features and stuff that we're talking about. It's coming to iPhone 4 and later, iPad 2 and later, iPad mini, iPad Touch 5th gen. As Adam mentioned, they didn't really touch on any features. And you know what else I thought was interesting is they didn't really show very much about iOS 7 on iPad. So yeah, I wonder if maybe they just don't have it finished.
Well, if they're going to release it on the 18th for the iPad and the iPad mini, then yeah, it's as far along as it is for the iPhone.
It's Gold Master. I mean, they put out the Gold Master, what they call the Gold Master version. It's so funny they still use that term. But the Gold Master version out to developers today. So that pretty much seals the deal, yeah.
See, thank you, because some people were actually asking me that on Twitter. So it's out today for developers.
It's on the dev site. They haven't pushed out the over-the-air version. I don't know if they're going to, but it's available for download through the dev site, yeah.
Okay, awesome. You know what else I thought was really interesting about today's event is I really love this a lot. So Apple made several direct comments regarding just stuffing technology that you don't really need into products. And I want to read you a couple of quick quotes. This one from Tim Cook. He said, "We don't just pack in feature after feature. We think deeply about experiences we want to create. ... y'all." Johnny, he said that under his breath. You may not have caught that part. I did, though. Johnny Ives said, "It's not just rampant technology for technology's sake." I kind of thought these were shots across the bow at Samsung. Which I loved, especially Johnny Ives' comments about rampant technology for technology's sake, because I feel that is what Samsung does all too often, is just pack all this crap into their phones. And a lot of it's stuff that you may not use.
Oh, totally. Look at that watch that just came out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was going to say the watch is a prime example of that.
They had not thought of even a good single use case for that, not even telling the time.
Does it tell time? I don't even know if it does that.
Probably the last thing it does. You probably have to go through 8 different screens to get to it.
It's like 5 menus deep. Yeah, and Apple doesn't do that. I mean, they obviously think out what they're doing and why they're putting technology into their products.
And that's why it's so crazy why this one was so short, because I think, you know, the fingerprint sensor on the 5S, there are so many ramifications to that. I mean, they gave one example of how you could use it, or two examples, right? How to unlock your phone and then by songs in iTunes. But the first slide they showed, you know, they had pictures of locks, keys, card readers, you know, at stores, point of sale terminals. And, you know, this, I think, is going to obviously impact all of those things over time.
Yeah, absolutely. And overall, as a package, I was saying this on Twitter. By the way, I apologize to everyone following me on Twitter about the endless stream of consciences as I'm just tweeting out stuff as I'm seeing it. I think this is the most exciting S upgrade ever. I'm a little bummed that I switched from the S cycle. So I had a 4S switch to the 5, which cost me a pretty penny because I didn't qualify for an upgrade. And now I'm kind of wishing I hadn't done that because I have the iPhone 5, but this 5S looks fantastic. Let's just jump right into it. So
you can get some good money for your – just FYI, I mean, the reselling places and Apple's going to be buying back phones too now, right? So some good money for your 5 if you want to fund a switch back to the 5S.
You know, I was thinking about that. I might because there's so much great technology in this phone that I think it would actually be worth it.
Well, you know, we were looking at it, just the chip alone, right? The faster chip, you go, ooh, that looks really cool. And then you go, the faster graphics. Yeah, I want that. And on and on. The camera looked awesome. Incredible.
It does. The camera updates are huge.
The camera updates are huge in this.
Before you jump on, did you want to talk about, I mean, they did a little quick in-between thing on iWork. I think Cook came back.
Oh, yeah, I was going to mention that at the end.
Is that later?
But no, let's just do it right now.
I didn't slide down the notes.
Sorry. Oh, that's okay. Let's just talk about it right now, because he did kind of throw it out there, and I actually kind of missed this the first time around. So please, Adam, if you would.
Well, it wasn't much. I mean, the key thing there was they said that they're going to make the iWork and iPhoto, iMovie applications for iOS free. Now, I got all excited at first, and then there was sort of the caveat thrown in. It slipped by a lot of people, again, that, you know, things may change sort of thing. Free on any new device. So it sounds like they're going to bundle those things for free, like just like they do on with, you know, the iLife suite on the Mac. So,
which is pretty cool, because a lot of people are going to get the new iPhone and a lot of people are going to get the iPhone 5C. And how much, what's the value of those apps together? Isn't it like $20 or $25?
I think they're about 10 or 15 bucks a piece now, right?
Okay.
I get confused. I think they're 15 on the desktop and I want to say 10 on the mostly.
Yeah, I think iMovie's five. So yeah. Regardless, you're getting a bunch of cool apps that are really useful.
Yeah, iMovie's really cool.
Yeah, iMovie's great.
Microsoft doesn't even have their productivity apps on the iPhone. So,
that was the big downfall on the Surface, right? Because it came with Office, but it was just like, you know, Office on the desktop interface. And so, like, you know, I played around with this in the store, and you try to use it. They didn't even bother their core app, the thing everybody buys a Microsoft device for, is to run Office, right? And they didn't even optimize it for their tablets. And I think had they done that, I think their Surface tablets would have sold a lot better. But just the experience was so awful. I mean, Pages is actually usable. Numbers is actually usable. Keynote's great on an iPad because they thought about, you know, going back to what you were saying earlier, that, you know, Apple doesn't just throw the technology together. They think about how to use it. And yes, those apps on the iPad are slightly crippled. They don't have all the features and functionality of the desktop versions, but there's a good reason for that, right?
Yeah, very true. And Apple will go as far as holding something back. You know, if it's not ready, they just don't release it, even to the extent where they'll get ridiculed for not releasing something. And then, of course, when they do come out and release it, everyone's like, oh, my gosh, this is great. Look how well thought out it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but during the product drought that we've had, the product drought, is that a real thing from Apple? It happened, the product drought from Apple. We're all complaining that they're not releasing anything, and now all of a sudden we have these two great new products. You know what, guys? This is going to seem crude and unusual, but let's hop to a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about all the rest of the stuff from the 5S. We're going to talk about the 5C. And all the great new technology in those two phones. So stick with us, y'all. We'll be right back to talk about the rest. Hey, guys, Airfun here, and I want to say thank you to Shutterstock for making this episode of the Cultcast possible. If you are building a website, creating an advertisement, making a multimedia presentation, or you have a film project going, you've definitely got to check out Shutterstock. They have over a million high-quality stock video clips, 2D animations, and 3D motion graphics for you to choose from, and they have these clips in a variety of digital formats, and most come in HD. Searching through these assets is also incredibly easy. Shutterstock gives you a ton of sophisticated tools you can use to search. Plus, for those of you looking to make a Facebook ad, Shutterstock has partnered with Facebook to provide advertising customers free access to all of its stock images. And I think the coolest part is Shutterstock is always adding new content. If you didn't find what you're looking for this time, definitely come back, because a lot of Shutterstock's contributors are filmmakers just like you, and Shutterstock is adding over 10,000 new video clips each and every week. So if you're tired of searching the web for the right video clip or image for your project, head on over to Shutterstock.com. You don't need a credit card, just start a new account, and you can begin using Shutterstock to collect images and videos you want to use for your next project. If you decide you want to purchase the items that you've saved, just check out using the code CULTCAST9, that's CULTCAST and the number 9, and you're going to save 25% off your entire order. So to all our creatives out there, you filmmakers, you web designers, head on over to Shutterstock.com and make sure to use the code CULTCAST9 at checkout for 25% off. Thank you, Shutterstock, for sponsoring yet another episode of the CULTCAST. Let's get back to all this iPhone goodness. And we're back! Welcome back, everyone. Okay, so, as promised, let's jump into iPhone 5S first. Let's do A7 chip, because this was titillating to me. This is the world's first and only smartphone with a 64-bit chip. That was Phil Schiller's line. 64 bits, for those of you that don't know what this means, Adam, feel free to steer me here as I talk about this, since I may misspeak. But it basically just makes the phone able to address more memory. It should make the phone faster. In fact, Apple put up some cool charts during the keynote, and one of them showed that the CPU for the iPhone 5S is 40 times faster than the original iPhone. The graphics are 56 times faster than the original iPhone. And overall, the iPhone 5S is twice as fast than the iPhone 5. That's a huge increase in processing power. Adam, are you able to speak about the like maybe just like higher level intricacies of 64 bit?
Not too much. I mean, okay. In essence, it just means that it can, you know, process larger blocks of information, chunks of information, double, basically 32 to 64, just like you're saying. So double your, you know, floating point registries, double general purpose registries. So, you know, it can get information to and from, you know, in and out of the processor basically faster and in bigger chunks.
Gotcha.
Right.
Oh, so, yeah.
Can process that.
You know, gotcha. And people were really excited on Twitter when I tweeted that, even though I kind of wonder how many people even knew what it meant. 64 bits! Oh my gosh!
Right.
It's like just because Apple releases it, you want
imagine
it.
if your mouth right now, you can fit one certain size donut. And now imagine if you could fit one twice.
Oh my goodness. You thank you for putting it in terms that Leander can understand.
That's an image I can do.
Yeah. I often try that feat. Rarely does it work. So I guess the story here is major increase in processing power.
Yeah,
it's also
going
to include OpenGL support. Apple's also re-engineered iOS 7 to be 64 bits. So and all their native apps as well.
Yeah. Now here's the real important thing about the 64-bit, because this was the same transition we went through in the desktop, right? Going from 32-bit to 64-bit. You're not going to see all the benefits right away in every application. Things are going to have to be rewritten and re-engineered to take advantage of the 64-bit architecture. So right out of the gate, your apps aren't just going to be suddenly faster. Mm-hmm. The OS, and somebody tweeted this out. I saw some tweets out about this, you know, from some Android people, like, well, it doesn't matter if the processor is 64-bit, the OS has to be optimized. Mm-hmm. And the good thing is Apple immediately came out and said, iOS 7 completely re-engineered for 64-bit. All of the Apple apps re-engineered for 64-bit. So you're going to see it in Apple's apps. It's going to take a while for the developer community, because they did mention that Xcode is updated, has the ability for developers to build 32-bit and 64-bit apps simultaneously. So that's huge. So there's some good stuff on the developer side, but it's going to take a while for developers to get these tools and to rework their apps and get things built up. And so, you're going to see it most in the high-end apps. So like photo processing, video.
Oh, yeah, games, for sure.
3D, you know, all that kind of stuff is going to get infinitely better on this new processor.
Yeah.
Leander, were you going to say something?
I saw something on Twitter, but I can't remember where it came from. Someone said that it took them 2 hours to rebuild their app.
Wow.
For a bit or something like that, recompile it.
Yeah, and it's going to depend on the app, too, you know, the complexity of the app and things like that. I'm trying to think of, you know, some of the higher-end probably graphics apps. You know, if Adobe's going to go through and do – I don't use Photoshop on iOS because I don't think it's all that great. But, I mean, if they're going to retool something like that, I would imagine it's a bigger process than, you know, certain other apps.
Cool. Well, so that's going to be kind of a future thinking piece of technology, right? The phone's going to get better as you own it. Let's talk about the camera, which is something that you could use immediately. I was really excited about this, Adam. It kind of sounds like you were too.
Me too.
And Leander, of course, Leander, you're the camera king.
Yeah, I'm not a huge camera guy, but I was more impressed by like how much thought. And again, the running theme of this goes back to those quotes you gave earlier, right? It's not just rampant technology. They didn't just think about the technology. It was the coupling of the technology with the hardware and software improvements that they're making. And the camera is the biggest example of this. I mentioned to somebody, like, I think they probably spent more time thinking about and retooling the camera system, the entire system, not just the technology and sensors and things like that. So,
boy, I'm so glad you said that, Adam, because Apple gets it, especially on this camera. It reminds me of the Nokia phone, how people always toss out that number of 41 or 42 megapixels. And as a photographer, you know, megapixels can be important, but they're generally not. And actually, oftentimes, I would rather go with a sensor that has a larger sensor area, which Apple made theirs 15% larger. They said they had 15% larger, a 50% larger active sensor area. And what they did, rather than just cram more megapixels on there, is they actually increased the size of the pixels, which is a strategy that camera manufacturers use as well to increase the dynamic range, which is how much light the sensor can read off one image at one time. So it's going to increase like how good your colors look and that type of thing. And then also, it'll be interesting to see how this works, but increase low light sensitivity, because since the sensors get larger, they're actually able to scoop up more light when you take a photo, which usually means that your low light pictures without flash should look better. So I'm really excited about that. We're also getting Leander, go ahead.
Well, the pictures they showed, you know, in the during the keynote, they definitely looked like they were much improved, especially that new flash. You know, now you got a flash that has twice it puts out a warm light or a warmer light for flesh tones.
Yeah, so they have what they called it is a true tone flash. I love like the little names Apple gives these things.
The marketing group is good,
and they have the normal flash, which looks like it was increased in size, the LED, but who knows about that. And then next to it, they have an amber flash. We actually talked about this in a previous episode. And they said that allows up to 1,000 different color combinations of flashlights. So it's supposed to make your skin tones look much more natural because, of course, when you're trying to take a picture of somebody's skin in the darkness, you don't want a bright, you know, daylight balance bulb hitting them because it can make the color of their skin look off. So by being able to mix these two flashes together, hopefully, I'm going to be interested to see how this actually works. It will create much better looking skin tones in flash photography.
Right. Here's where the integration comes in, though, right? It's because iOS 7 has some features built into it, and plus you have the image processors that are being leveraged. So before you even take a picture, the iPhone is doing all kinds of stuff. It's like checking white balance, doing auto exposure, updating a whole tone map, and then feeding that stuff in to probably set the colors of these, you know, LEDs to the right balance right before you take the picture. And you got to think about how fast that kind of stuff is happening and how quickly, you know, because it's a super fast camera too. I think we're probably going to get to that.
And what they could have done is just give us 20 megapixels. They could have just done that, right? And people would have, you know, been none the wiser. Like, oh, cool, 20 megapixels, look. And they would have compared it to the Samsung phones.
Right. They're also doing multiple exposures and then real-time analyzing them, I think they were saying, you know, so that it's going to actually be snapping a bunch of exposures and finding, you know, and picking. Again, software's going to go through, have to quickly process all those and then present to you what it thinks is the best, most balanced, most color-accurate one. And that's a lot of processing technology.
Isn't that what a good camera does anyway? I mean, like, if you have a good DSLR, doesn't it look at the white balance and it looks at... it does autofocus, and so it does a lot of processing in order to make the picture that you take the best one that it can. So what's the difference between doing that and taking a whole bunch of different pictures and then choosing it afterwards using some algorithm? I mean,
I think it takes the guesswork out of it for like a normal person, right? A normal person's going to use the auto mode, whereas for me, I would rather do it manually because I know what conditions the camera is going to perform best in. So I can put myself into a situation where I want to control the different photo, you know, settings myself because I know how the image is going to churn out rather than just having the camera choose that stuff. It reminds me of an old joke that somebody told me a long time ago that said the pictures that you're getting from your DSLR in auto mode were programmed by somebody in another country 10 years ago. You know what I mean? You have like an engineer who's like, oh, here's how I think this should work. And they're programming that stuff in. And you may or may not like that choice when it comes out and lands in your camera roll. But when you control it manually, you know, you get ultimate say over what your photo is going to look like.
Right. And so you have things like happening, like someone like me who, you know, you're out and about and you're taking a low light photo. It's going to, you know, open the and make a longer exposure, right, to compensate for that. But then I end up with blurry photos because I can't hold still to save my life. And I don't, you know, I'm not going to be the type of person who's going to think about, oh, I should set this up on a tripod. So now it's pulling in multiple exposures as it's doing that, you know, those long exposures. And it's going to then present me just with the sharp good one that it thinks is the best one, and I don't even know that this has happened, right? It's just, oh, that photo looks great, it's got good lighting and it's not blurry, and wow, that's really cool. And they even mentioned that it can somehow blend those exposures together.
I did see something about that, but didn't catch a lot of details,
like HDR but not quite so pronounced.
Hopefully not so pronounced. I'm not a huge fan of HDR.
It sounds like it's going to pick up the best lighting. You know, so I would assume things like, you know, if you're taking a shot and the background's not moving and the foreground thing is moving, you know, maybe it can pull the good lit background exposure and then merge that with the sharp photo of the kid. You know,
oh, that would be cool.
You know, that kind of stuff. And I know Adobe's been doing some of those kinds of processing things in post, you know, where you can take multiple exposures if you have them and sort of it'll auto magically merge them together. you know, the best face. We've seen this on other cameras too. I think Samsung has some cameras that you know you can swap faces basically, or it automatically swaps faces and stuff like that. So again, that's a lot of this is enabled, I think, because of the power of the processors in these mobile devices. And that's the other amazing thing is you got to think, so a good big, you know, digital SLR body has a lot of technology, but Apple's now crammed it into an iPhone. You know?
Yeah, excellent technology. I think the only thing holding it back is just the size of the sensor, because generally the bigger the sensor, the better the photo.
Right, but they did make it bigger. I mean,
they did make it bigger. Yeah,
they did make it bigger. So they're almost going in the opposite direction, it seems like, as some of their competitors. And I think what it's going to result in is much better photos. I think they really wanted to make sure that this iPhone is the best smartphone camera on the market. And I believe it probably will be. I mean, it'll be interesting to see when it gets out in the market and they start doing those hardcore tests. But I bet you it's going to be the top camera out there, regardless of megapixel or any of these other factors.
I think you might be right. And just going the opposite direction, not just dumping pixels onto the sensor, just shows me that Apple's not trying to just sell you a gimmick. Like, they're actually thinking, what can we put into this camera that's going to make it better and not just make people buy it? We should also talk about the fact that there's a new burst mode with up to 10 frames per second. That's super duper fast. And then 720p HD video at 120 frames per second, which is slow motion, which could be very cool. I bet, especially for kids who like to play around with video on these iPhones, they could do all sorts of cool things.
Think of all those skateboard movies.
That's actually what I was just thinking of.
here's another thing that they said that I want to get more details on this, you know, like to be added later. But there was a mention during the thing that you could select on the screen what part you want to be in slow motion. Does that mean I can combine my slow motion and like do some of those cool, you know, movie effects where I've got something moving in slow motion and the rest going at a different rate?
I did not catch that. Did they say that during the keynote?
Yeah. Well, it was in one of the live feeds. Again, this is why. This is just information flying at you, right? So you just hope that the person typing it, you know, you're understanding what they typed. If they can do that kind of thing, that would be really cool.
That would be cool. And that would be something, as far as I know, that would be totally unique. I've never heard of another camera or phone being able to do, you know, part of the image in slow motion as the rest is in normal motion. That would be very strange.
Basically capturing, you know, both frame rates, and I don't even know how you do that, right?
Yeah.
So it almost seems like this bullet time kind of stuff.
What's that, Leander?
Sounds like BS to me.
That's what I thought too when I read it. So
it sounds like maybe the blogger didn't understand what they were typing.
Yeah, right, exactly. I think you read this on The Verge, right?
I think it might have been Macworld.
I believe it was the Cult of Mac live stream, actually.
No. It wouldn't be on that one. No, probably Macworld. You're right.
Yeah, definitely Macworld. It's probably Jason Snell that wrote that. Hey, let's talk about this. I think this was eyebrow raise fascinating. So the M7 coprocessor, we talked about this in a previous episode. We were kind of thinking maybe it had something to do with motion tracking on the camera. No, it's actually motion tracking your physical motion. I think this is awfully awfully interesting considering all the stuff that's happening with fitness devices and stuff. So Apple said this coprocessor, the M7, essentially will tell apps whether you're stationary, walking, or driving, moving. It's continuously measuring your motion data and relaying that to different apps, possibly devices. And they said it enables a new generation of health and fitness apps. Very intriguing considering all the talk about how the iWatch is going to be a fitness device. They hired Jay Blahnik. And as we know, Apple doesn't just add technology for technology's sake. They added this chip for a reason. And they specifically called out Nike, who's going to be using this in one of their apps. And now I'm kind of thinking it's a possibility we might see an iWatch maybe even as soon as October. What do you guys think? Silence. No one wants to predict.
I think Apple came out and said this is your iWatch. I mean, they basically made the iPhone 5S an iWatch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? They went, everybody's using this. You get the time from your smartphone anyway, so why don't we just make the smartphone the fitness sensor thing, the smart thing, and adding this extra processor is a genius way of doing it, because they can do it really in an energy efficient way. Mm-hmm. And then there's also some cool stuff they're doing in, again, in software to leverage the stuff they were mentioning. I was reading through this on Apple's website. So things like the Maps app will automatically switch from driving to walking directions dependent upon if you're in your car or you step out of your car. Mm-hmm. The iPhone won't try and join Wi-Fi networks when it knows you're driving anymore. So you won't get the stupid pop-ups, you know, as you drive down
the freeway.
Oh, that will
be
cool.
I hate those. When you're driving through a neighborhood and it keeps trying to connect to someone's Wi-Fi network.
Right. And if it's been sitting around on a table for a long time, it knows it's not moving around. So it's going to, you know, ping your networks less frequently because it knows you're not using it, right? So now that saves on battery life. So all these kinds of things are super smart ways to leverage this. So it's not just about, you know, fitness apps and things like that. They can leverage this thing in all kinds of different ways with the software. It's super smart.
Wow, yeah, I hadn't even considered the ability to save on power by knowing that you're not actively using it.
Yeah, I hate to think because the iWatch. I think this, you know, the iWatch is so intriguing, especially some of the other technologies they've been looking at. They had this really interesting light sensor that could shine into your blood vessels and examine your blood sugar levels. Mm-hmm. They've been hiring engineers who helped develop the system. They also have some designers on the design team who, you know, who are looking at fabrics and advanced, it makes me hope that there's going to be some advanced wearables that are going to come out of this research. Yes. I would have said this is the iWatch chip. iWatch's chips, I'm hoping anyway. And that, you know, hopefully the iWatch would be more of a, you know, have more biometric sensing capabilities built into it.
I think for sure it will.
Well, hopefully. I mean, you could be right, though. Maybe this is their iWatch development. You know, maybe this is where the iWatch teams, this is where the iWatch is. It's actually a coprocessor that goes into your iPhone. Because there's still a lot of problems with the iWatch that, you know, they're going to be difficult to solve.
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. I don't necessarily know that the iWatch is going to be an iWatch. And I think Apple's looked at the current marketplace and sort of where the technology is right now. And I talked about this a little on my show because I picked up a Pebble just to try and understand, you know, why, where's the use case? Why do we even need as a smartwatch or something like that? And the Pebble maybe not be the most sophisticated example, but what I sort of came to the conclusion on was that this product, in Apple's terminology, doesn't really deserve to exist. It doesn't have a reason to exist.
Right, yeah.
And I think Apple's searching for that, and I think this coprocessor shows probably some of the early development that they've done. And I think you're right. This could end up in some other kinds of wearables. Will it be a watch? Maybe, maybe not. Apple's probably thinking differently than just a watch device. If it's something that goes on your wrist and it tells the time, you know, is it a watch?
There's no market for that. Nobody wants to get a watch that's going to tell them the time. Just tell them the time. And, tell them they got a new email message or a text coming in.
But even with the biometrics, or even look at the Gear. I mean, the Gear watch, it'll let you take phone calls. It does your notifications. It has apps. It has all this stuff crammed into it. But it still doesn't solve any problem. It doesn't.
It does a bunch of crap no one wants it to do.
Yeah.
Like, who wants to talk to their wrist and then hold their wrist up to their ear to be able to hear it?
Exactly. I mean, exactly. You're getting the point. But I think Apple's thinking about these things, obviously, and I think this is our first example of some of the things that they've produced out of it. And they went, and you know what? We're going to build this stuff into a processor, because what problem does this solve when you get into wearables? And I think one of the number one ones is battery life, right? This thing is probably sipping battery life, I assume, but it's doing a lot of things. It's monitoring a lot of different sensors, and it's still powerful in its own right. So
it definitely thickens the plot regarding iWatch. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this M7 coprocessor is utilized. Let's talk about the big feature, the huge feature, obviously, that everyone was curious about, and that is the sensor that's now living under the 5S home button. They're calling it Touch ID. And it looks to be the technology Apple acquired from the Authentic company they purchased. It's pretty visible. They put is it a steel band around the iPhone?
Stainless steel, yeah.
Stainless steel band right around the home button. And it's very obvious when you look that it's sitting there. And when you touch it, and I've heard reports that this actually works very quickly. It unlocks your iPhone. It also allows you to make purchases in iTunes. Phil Schiller did say that this this hasn't been opened up to other developers yet. So as far as additional functionality, it doesn't really seem, at least yet, that there's going to be anything more that this does other than unlock your iPhone, allow you to make iTunes purchases. But it does make your phone a lot more secure, and the fact that it's quick might make it easier to access your phone. Adam, any thoughts on the...
It works so well in some of the videos I've seen already that I almost thought that maybe they're faking it. Like, maybe they just don't even turn on the password.
Like, it doesn't even activate?
Because it looks like you just touch the home button, and it you don't even have a passcode lock on there. You see the person touch the phone, and the screen comes up. There's no feedback. There's no kind of, like, nothing, which is awesome. If that's how well it works and it is, you know, securely locked, then that's exactly how it should work. And, you know, leave it to Apple to get it to work that way. And there's some amazing technology just in that little scanner button. You know, it's a 360-degree readable, so it doesn't matter the orientation. I think in the video they show that it will get smarter, that sort of the more you use it.
Oh, interesting.
And it's like, it's scanning sub-epidermal, like, skin layers. It's just like, it's a little scary when you're going to think about it. It's like, you know, I'm going to touch my finger to that thing and it's probing deep into my skin.
Yeah, you don't want that from your iPhone.
No, I have a Alex E. Heath might like it though.
Yeah, and one really cool part that was in the video that a lot of people might miss, because people are going to immediately question, well, if I put my fingerprint in there, where is it being stored, and how is it securely stored in the phone? Yeah, did you catch this? So I guess they're calling it a secure enclave, which is just a little area inside the A7 processor where it's going to store this thing. Now, unfortunately, and I don't know how this works out for, I guess it'll be okay with APIs and things like that, but the touch sensor is the only thing that can access and read that area, at least according to Apple's video. So that's how they sort of lock it down and keep it secure.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of skepticism about this. I saw on Twitter already. I mean, there's a lot of people who are questioning, you know, whether this is going to come straight to the NSA. no matter what Apple says and how much they assure people. I mean, we've heard these assurances, you know, from lots of tech companies for a long time. And the revelations last week, you know, they've cracked encryption, I think makes people very, very suspicious. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how people react to it, like whether they... you know, whether that's how skeptical they are.
Well, I had one friend immediately say she didn't like it, and I was really surprised because I was really excited about it. And it, to me, I'm like, this is great because it gives a really strong layer of security to people who would never implement it. They don't want to use a passcode or anything. And
it's
she was worried that
right?
What's that?
Sorry, Apple said in their talk that their research showed that 50% of iPhone users, you know, I don't know if they said don't use a passcode, but basically their findings found that 50% of people said it was just too cumbersome to use a passcode.
Yeah. I'm surprised it's actually that low. I would guess it would be higher, you know, people who just don't want to bother with it. So this makes your phone secure, and Apple did say, I was either reading that they said this at the event or somebody had asked the question after, that this information isn't uploaded to the cloud anywhere. It's just stored on your phone. So you don't have to worry... Well, that's what they say.
Exactly.
You don't have to worry.
It's all who you trust. Do you trust Apple? Do you trust Google? Yeah. Do you trust, you know, we make these trust decisions all the time. And more, it's great that people are questioning them, though, right? But
yeah, it's important.
These companies have tons of our data.
Yeah, and I mean, Apple's going to have your, you know, the readings off your fingers. How much more personal identification information can you give them? I mean, your fingerprint is going to be stored digitally.
Soon your retina, I suppose.
Soon your retina.
Right, exactly. And your blood sugar levels and, you know.
Yeah.
That gyroscope in there is going to...
Your heart rate. And I mean, it's funny you mention that. I mean, the data that's being collected by that M7 coprocessor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you want your doctor or your
insurance company?
Insurance company to have that data?
Your insurance rates go up like 200% because you get a job that requires you to be more stationary and your iPhone alerts them. Your premiums go up. You know, it's funny. That's totally obviously ludicrous, but it could happen.
Exactly. It's not. That's the whole point, right? It's
like
we have to build a trust relationship with these companies. And more what I like about what Apple's doing, I mean, I guess maybe because I'm an Apple owner, is, you know, if they build a payment system on top of my iTunes ID and it's just Apple that has this information, at least I know it's only Apple. And if Apple gets caught, you know, selling this stuff off to people, then, you know, it's one point of entry. But when Google has some of my data and Facebook has some and, you know, Flickr has some other, and you've got it spread all over the place, it's harder to control. So
yeah, the more you put out there, it's like once you put it out there, who knows what happens with it. Yeah. Just to make people a little bit more skeptical. Let's talk about the iPhone 5C. This was an exciting product to me. I think, Adam, you were on the show when we initially talked about the idea of this being released and how Apple was going to just essentially stuff an iPhone 5 into a plastic casing and call it an iPhone 5C. And alas, that is exactly what happened. It is a lot more colorful. It's essentially the same hardware. The camera is the same. It's not 64 bits. It's using the same ASICs processor as the iPhone 5, which is a great processor. I mean, I have the iPhone 5. I'm very happy with it. The colors are blue, white, pink, yellow, and green. I thought this was a fun fact. The wallpaper that ships with your phone is the same color as the plastic back. How cute.
That's not technology for technology.
I think that was Tim Cook's idea.
Right.
No, that's like, Johnny.
You think that's Johnny? I like to think it was Tim Cook.
Yeah, exactly. That's your marriage right there of hardware and software. That's tight integration.
Yeah, that is.
You can't get tighter than that.
Available for $99 for 16-gigabyte model, $199 for the 32-gigabyte model. That is with a 2-year contract. And actually, we should probably mention the prices of the 5S. Same as they were before, $199, $299, and $399 for the 16, 32, and 64 gigabyte models. I'm bummed. I was really hoping they were going to go 32, 64, 128.
That's what I thought they would do too.
Yeah, and that seems to make sense.
I'm surprised they went 8 gig on the free 4. So the 4S is going to be free now, right?
And
so
that phone, yeah, I'm surprised they're keeping that around.
It's got the 30-pin connector. They're dropping it to 8 gigabytes, which I think is not enough storage. Why couldn't they throw... They could have thrown 16 in there. Come on.
They could have... That, oh, you know,
that's the phone you give to, you know, your 12-year-old kid, right? To take to school so you can track where they are. my iPhone. You know, my kids have got their hand-me-down iPhones, and they smash the screen within a week. I mean, sometimes it's a day. And... you know, you want, and this one, I think, you know, it uses all the old accessories. This is your classic hand-me-down phone.
You don't force them to put an OtterBox on there?
They take them off. They don't want an OtterBox because they're kids. They want
of course they don't. Cases. Yeah. I'd be the horrible dad that's like, Dad, they're all going to make fun of me. And then they just take it off the minute they left the house.
And put it back on before they get home.
Exactly.
Johnny Ive said, actually, I believe this was Johnny Ive, who said, the phone is unapologetically plastic. I really like that line, because he went on to say, we took the same fanatical care of how the iPhone 5C feels in your hand. He was referring to the nicer 5S model. So it is a plastic phone, but it's not a piece of crap. I mean, it's a really nice, well-thought-out plastic phone. They give it a bigger battery. It has the same 8-megapixel camera as the iPhone 5. And then they put a lacquered coating on the back to, I guess, to make it smoother, to make it more durable. I think this thing is going to sell like crazy.
Yep.
I think you're going to see these things everywhere. They really are fun colors. And I think paired with iOS 7, which is brightly colored and fun itself, you're just going to see these things everywhere. This is going to be Apple's newest, hottest phone, I think. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, you know, the first thing I saw, I thought they developed this for emerging markets, for China and India. Yep. And you think, okay, you know, if it's for emerging markets, then why are they in these poppy kid colors? Mm-hmm. Maybe they're actually, you know, they develop them for kids in first world countries, because they're still not cheap. They're still not giveaway. They're still premium products, or at least mid-tier anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these aren't what they're competing against, $99 or free iPhone, Android handsets that are coming out of Chinese handset makers that are really cheap, handsets, but they run full Android, and, you know, they're given away free with, or very cheaply, $50, $100 in places, you know, like in Africa and India with no contract plans. So, you know, you buy a phone for $50, $100, and then you get like a month-to-month plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that's where all this huge Android growth is coming from in these developing nations, from these dirt cheap phones. And these definitely don't compete with those.
Nope.
So, you know, they're much more like this. Johnny and I said the same thing about the iMac back in 1997. That was an, I quote, unapologetically plastic product. Exactly what he said. And then, you know.
Is like, it really like, verbatim? That's what he said?
Exactly the same quote. Exactly the same thing. If it was good then, that line is good now. And they did the same thing with the iMac. You know, mm-hmm. the iMac came out in Bondi Blue. And then, you know, I think it was actually really quick. It was like 6 months after it came out. They came out in five different, what they called lifesaver colors. Mm-hmm. Same colors. Yellow, red, blue, green, and over that over the life of the iMac, I mean, I think they had more than a dozen different colors, and they matured the colors as well. You know, they got sort of darker, a bit deeper, and then they had flower power and
the
blue
flower Dalmatian
in the end. Yeah.
Dalmatian dot.
But I wonder why it took them so long to do this with the iPhone, because they did the same thing with the iPod too. Mm. You know, with the iPod Mini and the iPod Nano, those came in different colors. But yeah, the colors are interesting. The ones that the you know I've been trying to ask my daughter what her and her friends think of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they're mm-hmm. at school, they're, so of course they're at school today. So they haven't actually heard anything about the announcement. They saw the rumors, uh-huh. but I'm going to talk to her tonight to see whether it really does appeal to a kid or not. I have a feeling she'll go for the gold. I mean, I think she like you know all the kids, even my youngest kid. I mean, they'll know exactly what technology is in this,
mm-hmm.
and they want the latest technology. I mean, they'll want the fingerprint scanner. They'll want, you know, I bet they'll want the gold-colored 5S, not the crummy plastic 5C.
Yeah, but are they more sophisticated than their peers because of what you do, or?
No, all the kids are like that. No,
yeah, do they have $700 to spend on a phone?
But but their friends, yeah, but they do at Christmas time or at their birthdays. My God, yeah, these kids come around. I mean, you know, 12-year-old kids, some of my youngest son's friends, I mean, they know more about it than I do.
Wow.
There's technical questions about the A7 processor, and I'm like, what? How do I know?
You're like, do you want a job?
Yeah, exactly. I know. If California's labor laws, you know, were a little laxer, I would definitely be, I'd have a whole
have a team of children full of writing kids, for Cult of Mac. Team Cult of Mac on the news for you.
I wonder who it's, you know, like, I sort of wonder who they're going to appeal to, because they're not dirt cheap, and they're kind of, you know, they're not the coolest, latest, greatest stuff. So
we're missing the China event right now, right? I mean, that was going to happen later this afternoon. So I wonder, I'd be curious to see what they say at that event in terms of, is that going on right now?
I'm not sure. I thought it was.
Yeah, it's either now or it's later today. It's like sort of tomorrow in Asia, which is, well, how many hours ahead are they? Like 11 or something?
I think 30.
Supposed to announce like China. The rumor is it'll be China Mobile, which is would be huge, and you would think the 5C would be the phone for them. But you're right. I mean, pricing wise, it's not that cheap. So it'll be interesting to see how they position that.
You know, maybe the price will drop over the time. Maybe it's cheaper for different carriers. I mean, this was the U.S. you know event that they're talking to AT&T and Verizon and Sprint customers.
Right.
So I don't know, you know, like I know that you can get it's very different, the pricing structure in Europe. It will be interesting to see how they position it in China.
Hmm. And they're still a lot more expensive in like Australia. I've already got people from Australia tweeting me saying there's no way we're going to buy these because they're too expensive, but they will. So I told them back, like, you will. Totally will. But you're gonna complain about it, of course.
Yeah, yeah,
but you're right. Still going to do it, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I think the 5C is interesting. I mean, no one ever gets excited about a hand-me-down iPhone, right? And by hand-me-down, I mean Apple releases it, it's brand new, and then a year later, they demote it to be their middle-tier line. They drop the price. No one was excited about those. Now, every year, both lines get refreshed. You get a new, brand new, high-end iPhone, and then you get the mid-tier iPhone. And I do think that younger people are going to be excited about these, especially with all the bright colors, and they're still great phones. I think these are going to appeal to younger people in the United States.
And maybe soccer moms, you know.
Soccer moms, which is probably 80% of our audience. Yeah. So we want to hear from you guys and let us know what you guys think about the 5C.
I think so, because, you know, a lot of them, you know, they don't get caught up a lot of the technology, but they know the iPhone. And this, again, this is like the theme of this show, right? Is mm-hmm. the it's the software and it's the hardware. So if we get back to how good, even the, you know, this camera didn't change, the EyeSight didn't camera didn't change, but the EyeSight camera and the iPhone 5 and the one that's going to be in the 5C still hold up really well to some of the top Android phones and stuff that are coming out right now, and in some cases do better. So when you're at the soccer game and you're both shooting pictures of your kid and you got an Android and you got an iPhone, the person's going to look over at the iPhone photos, see that they're better photos, and be like, oh, I want my next phone to be an iPhone. But a lot of times they don't want to spend, you know, they want the $99, they want the free doll, the free phone. So here's a brand new iPhone, it's $99 sold. I mean, it's like they don't even have to market that. The person just walks in and says, I want an iPhone, I want to pay $99, and they go, here.
Their hardest decision is like, what color should I get it in?
Exactly. It's a really smart marketing pivot, because it's like, now the item isn't old, it's brand new, even though it's using the older technology. But it's like, here you go, here's a brand new iPhone. And like you said, Adam, I mean, the price is going to be a huge deal. And plus, these phones are probably going to be more durable because they're plastic. So you can drop it, your kids can play with it, they can maybe throw it a little bit.
Well, it was always it wasn't the back of the case that broke on the iPhone. It's the screen, and I think the screen's still going to break.
Well, now they have Apple Care Plus, and so they you know, they're dealing with that in a lot of good ways. So they can upsell people on that. Hey, look, if you drop it, it's $50. You'll get a new screen, you know, all that stuff. So they sort of have answers to all those concerns.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was surprised how much time they spent on the cases too.
Yeah.
But again, I think, you know, like you were saying, the color, the personalization, that has so much to do with it. And that's why the cases are almost, you know, they're probably as important as the colors themselves.
Can we talk about a design decision on the specifically the 5C cases that never would have happened under Steve?
Like, you're talking about the circles?
Well, it's not just the circles. if you look at the back of the iPhone with that case on with the circles, the middle circle where it says iPhone now just says non. N-O-N.
Oh, it's like, wow.
Like, how does that slip through?
Yeah, boy, seriously, that's something that Johnny Ive must not have had his hands on. He's like, that was the intern's job to manage that project.
So it says non-phone. It's the non-phone.
Yeah, that's ugly.
Branding genius. Hey, guys, let's wrap up with this. Hot off the presses, Apple has announced they're also going to be selling a Lightning dock for iPhone 5S and for your other devices as well. So finally, because people ask me occasionally, hey, what dock do you use? And I don't really know of a great dock. But I think the bigger news story here is that this thing's $29. $29 for an Apple accessory, especially one like this.
What's it look like?
It's basically just a piece of white plastic with a Lightning adapter sticking out of it. But, you know, a cable costs $20.
Yeah.
So,
Does it come with a cable?
Actually, you know what? That's a great point.
You have to bring your own cable?
Yeah. I hope it's not a BYO cable. There's just $30 for a big hunk of plastic. Let's see here. Let me see if I can confirm it before we head out. No, I don't see it here. Stick with
Subject
us.
Subject to change.
Subject to change. I'm just going to go ahead and say yes. Asterisk. Subject to change. We'll leave it at that.
They have some. I mean, because they have some great, like, big beefy aluminum ones out there now that.
Yeah, do you have one that's your favorite? Because people always ask me that question.
No, I don't. I don't use a docking stand. I have my latest one I'm playing around with right now is the latest one from ThoughtOut, and I'm of course going to blank on the model, but I have little ThoughtOut stands that you just sort of set it in there and then you just attach your cable that's sitting there on your desk. I don't know, I was never a big dock guy, and I don't even use a case, so
I don't either.
Most docking systems just fine.
Okay, this thing, it does not come with a cable. You have to plug your Lightning cable into the back. So it has a Lightning port on the back where you plug in your cable, and then a Lightning port, you know, where your iPhone sits.
Right.
So you're basically just paying. So you basically are just paying $30 for a hunk of plastic. But hey, you know, you also get a Lightning, I guess, a Lightning nib.
That's cool. There are a lot of great third-party solutions out there that I think that look really, really nice. So
cool. Well, I'm excited
about
this.
It's good that Apple has one. I mean, yeah, they need
I think
to have
so
something.
Too. Seems like a basic item to have, but let's go ahead and wrap it up there. Hey, Adam, I know everyone's got to go and start writing fervorously. So, Adam, thanks again for being on the show. I really appreciate you jumping on last minute right after the keynote, that is.
Fun.
And you're going to be coming out with a show this week, right? Covering even more stuff?
Yeah, we'll get more in depth. I have my regular show, you know, that we need to jump into. So answering people's questions, helping people out with their tech stuff, and diving, you know, really deep probably into all of the stuff that's going to come out over the next couple of days regarding this launch. And then I'm sure all of the new rumors, you know, about what we're going to see in October.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I've been already reading rumors about the iPhone 6.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, the large
jeez. Yeah. Yeah, we'll probably cover some of those next time, huh? What's that, Leander?
I can't wait for that one.
Yeah. Adam, are you going to be buying one of the new iPhones?
Yeah, because I you know, I'm married, so I do the whole spouse swap thing. So
where you get the new one, like, and then you give the old one to her?
Yep, you got it.
That's your plan? Man.
That's what I've been doing for years, and it works out really well.
Oh, my gosh.
She doesn't care less about technology, so she gets an upgraded phone every year just like I do.
That is brilliant.
Yeah, we do the same thing.
Yeah.
It does.
That's great. All right, well, hey, guys, let's wrap it up. That's all the cult cast we have for you guys this week. Remember, this episode replaces the one that normally comes out on Thursday, so don't expect a new episode then. We just wanted to get this one out ASAP. Hey, you could follow us on Twitter if you want. Talk about all these great developments in the Apple world. We're excited to talk about them. Adam, you're just MacCast, MacCast, right?
Yep.
Excellent. Leander's L. Caney. I'm at Airfon. And of course, for everything that's going to be happening on all this great plethora of Apple products, make sure you're following Cult of Mac. We'll tell you more about it. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes come out every Thursday night, except for this week. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys. Take us away, Leander.
Next time.
So... and kind of tough, too. I like that. Yeah.